Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Of course, this is our final segment of the day, and my featured guest, we welcome from the state of Washington, Ashley Trout. How are you today, Ashley?
I'm great. Thank you.
Good. Well, it's a delight to have her with us. Actually, we could have just as soon caught you in Argentina if we were on a different season, as our listeners are going to hear that Ashley is a winemaker from Flying Trout Wines, which is a bi-hemispherical boutique winery that produces 500 cases a year between the state of Washington's Walla Walla Valley and Argentina. Over 10 years ago, at age 18, Ashley started winemaking as a part-time job in Washington. She's a native of the other Washington, mainly Washington, D.C., and has traveled extensively in Asia, Indonesia, and Latin America, and also studied at the University of Chile in Santiago. A former tennis instructor and later an English teacher in Japan, she moved to the wild U.S. Northwest for a taste of something different, and of course that taste being wine. Due to a serious rock climbing accident, though, that left her badly injured and bedridden, Ashley missed the harvest in the Northern Hemisphere that year and so decided to go south to Argentina for their crush, thus, as we say, pun intended, following the fall in both hemispheres, and now Flying Trout Wines was created. The Malbec variety is actually her primary focus, and in 2009, Ashley signed on with Taro Estates to help them expand their business, plus take her craft to the next level. So I'd like to know, right off the bat, where did the fascination of wine come from?
The fascination of wine came when I was already working in a winery. When I moved to the Wild Wild West, I kind of took it with the understanding that I would do sort of a when in Rome thing. So I would just say yes to everything. And I came across this part-time job for a winery, and I thought that was something that I've never had the opportunity to do before. So I did it for that reason alone. And then once I was doing it, once I was working in a winery, the job itself, wine aside, the job itself, I love. It's both physical and mental, and you get really dirty and sticky and smelly throughout the day, and you're playing with the land, and you're also thinking about organic chemistry and biology and geology, and so you really hit all of these different parts of your brain, and then you also really get in touch with the a type of intelligence that a lot of people don't have to use, which is your smell, your taste,
exactly.
Your sight.
I was going to say all your sensory abilities, let alone also being cognizant of that weather environment, the seasonal nature of things.
Yeah, and so it was that job that really, that the ability to do that day in and day out that led me to love the taste of wine. It was the job that I loved first, actually, yeah.
And the kind of people that you met, were you surrounded by those, you know, already in touch with a lot of senses that maybe you were reawakening or you never even knew you had, you know, a knack for?
Oh, for sure. And I'm originally from Washington, D.C. That's where I grew up. And it's not a part of yourself that is ever, it's not a skill that's honed where I grew up from. And so it's, it was fascinating to sort of walk into this world where people had a whole new set of intelligence.
Mm-hmm. I like that. Yeah. The other piece of it, as I mentioned in the introduction, though, you've had a lot of very global, different influences on your life. I think you had told me before the show that actually your grandmother, with a Latin American descent, really had an influence on you in terms of your looking at alternative perspectives.
Yeah, I spoke Spanish before I spoke English in my house, and it was, and growing up in D.C., you do get surrounded by all the different diplomats and different cultures, and from a very early age, I understood that the positives that come with being around different always outweigh the negatives. And so so for me, traveling and sort of being out of my element has always been necessary, fulfilling.
But the idea that you ended up here in the Pacific Northwest, again, just because that was a part of the country you hadn't been to before or lived extensively in?
Kind of, yeah, actually. I have a lot of family in the South, and I had a lot of friends who were going to school up north, and north being New England. And so I wanted just something totally different. I looked at a couple of colleges in Canada, and I looked west of the Rockies in the U.S., and I just wanted to sort of jump in with both feet. But there really weren't a lot of great reasons other than, you know, looking for the unknown.
I like that, looking for the unknown and not even knowing what you don't know, so you find out what you do know, right?
You just kind of show up, yeah.
You kind of show up. So actually, then, your training in the whole wine industry, it's really right there in the field then.
Almost all of it has, yeah. And I've taken some classes here and there, and they've been fascinating, and I'd like for that to be a part of my life forever, just a continual education with books and with teachers. But a lot of what I've done so far has been in the moment and with experts all around me in the workplace, yeah.
That's great. I mentioned in the introduction, though, that you had, you know, what must have been a horrific accident that sidelined you. Tell us about that whole experience and then this moment of reflection that guided you to this next path.
Well, there was less reflection than one would think, but I'm jumping. I was doing a lot of rock climbing, and I loved it. And I was climbing one day, and I had tied my 8-knot wrong, and I kept slipping and yanking the end of the rope into the middle of the 8-knot finally, so that the last time I fell, I really fell, and I wasn't attached to anything. So I fell about 35 or 40 feet on rock, not attached to anything, and broke a lot of stuff, broke a lot of bones. And so that harvest in the Northwest, I just missed because I was in a wheelchair and then I was on crutches, and it is a very physical job. So I was more of a nuisance than anything else at that point. Harvest-wise, and I was getting better just as we were pressing off the last stuff, and so that means you've got 2 more months until the southern hemisphere happens for crush, and so that's why I started looking at the southern hemisphere, because I just didn't want to wait 9 months, especially when you've been in a wheelchair and when you've been on crutches, and Sure. You just kind of feel so slowed down. When you can finally do something, You want to do it right now.
And so
that harvest was, it made sense to go down south for that harvest.
And how'd you come to select Argentina? And I mean, was this, you know, looking on Craigslist in Argentina for jobs in the wine industry, or was this through some networks or people that you already knew in a certain area of Argentina?
It was kind of a mixture of both of those. What happened was I had some good friends from high school who were Argentine diplomats' kids, and so they were also, by definition, Argentine diplomats, and they were going through their own set of culture shock because they were high schoolers, and so they would all hang out with each other, and for a lot of high school, I heard all about Argentina because they were reminiscing, and so when it came time for me to look at the Southern Hemisphere, I chose Argentina for 2 main reasons. Neither of them are reasons you would expect. One is because I had heard all about Argentina from these friends.
Right.
And the other is because I had studied at the University of Chile for 6 months beforehand. So I had been to Chile. I wanted to sort of reconnect with that Spanish part of my life, and I wanted to see what all the Argentinians had always been talking about. So it had nothing to do with Malbec. It had nothing to do with wine. It was just, once again, you know, searching for the unknown kind of thing.
I love that. That's great. And so that first crush that you went down there, what were some of the big ahas that you got compared to your having participated in the crushes in the United States?
Well, for one thing, when an Argentine person says, sure, come on down, you've got a job, it doesn't actually mean you've got a job. So what wound up happening was I showed up and I was homeless and jobless, and I had a plane ticket back for 3 months later. So that was certainly the first big surprise. But winemaking-wise, the big difference is they do a lot of wine in the laboratory. So up here, at least in the Oregon, sort of the Willamette Valley, Oregon area, and then in the Walla Walla Valley, which is both Washington and Oregon, and Taro Estates and I are currently on the Oregon side, but it's a big valley. We're all doing such small lots that you don't need to rely on numbers, because you're tasting it and you're seeing it and you're smelling it and you're right there with it on a very regular basis, and that's easy to do. With a winery that's huge, it's tough to keep track of everything, and so you've really got your I's and cross your T's in the laboratory and with numbers. And so it's much more of a paint-by-numbers issue when you're doing bigger wines, which Argentines do, because they economically have to export a lot of stuff.
So for you, then, it's been quite an interesting, so you're getting education from two big corners of the wine world, then, from on the ground as well as that balance in the laboratory side.
Right. And the interesting side is you've got sort of the more artsy-fartsy side where we are in the United States, and then you've got the more sort of black and white, paint by numbers, get a lot of wine done in a very good, healthy, clean way, but secure. So it's two different ends of the spectrum.
Interesting. Now, Malbec, explain what Malbec wine is all about for our listeners who may not be familiar.
Malbec has had just a huge upsurge because of Argentina, because of how well it's been doing. Originally, Malbec is from, as far as we can tell, either the Bordeaux region of France or Cahors, most likely Bordeaux, and then it went to Cahors. And those are the Malbec that comes out of France is very, it's got a lot of tannins. The Malbec that comes out of Argentina that was planted about 80 years ago and more recently tends to be more floral, more perfumey. And then the Malbec that comes out of the United States tends to be, I think, a little more peppery, sort of black pepper. And then it's also got a little more of like a marmalade, chewy, tactile sort of a thing. So Malbec does different things in different places, but it almost always has sort of a plum and what we call brambleberry thing going on. So raspberries, blackberries, marronberries, huckleberries.
Which, of course, for that part of Oregon, Washington, that whole valley there, that's just indigenous to that part of the two states.
Yeah, it goes really well with a lot of the cuisine, it is sort of an ever-present theme, for sure.
I love that. Well, Taro Estates now, you're in a new relationship. So, and by the way, I think just great, the name Flying Trout Wines, of course, is a result of how many frequent flyer miles you've collected over the years flying back and forth.
Exactly.
It's not that you're into fly fishing, although you might do that as well.
I'm too fidgety. I'm too ADD, and I have a lot of respect for it, but no.
No, okay. And then your recent association here in 2009 with Taro Estates. Tell us how this has come about.
Well, like a lot of entrepreneurs, I was trying to do too much alone, and I think these guys were as well. And we really wanted something that made sense for all of us. I was doing a lot of winemaking, and it wasn't in a facility that I enjoyed. It's a garage, which is very romantic, but it was very tough to keep clean. And really, at the end of the day, there are a lot of important things that have to happen for the wine that are tough to do in a garage.
Yes.
So they offered me the opportunity to be making my wines in a facility that is beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. And in return, I could sort of keep an eye on some of their lots as an assistant winemaker, because Doug is he's the winemaker for Taro Estates. He's also dealing with a 25, 26-acre vineyard that's some of the oldest vineyard property in the valley. And so it's a lot to deal with, not to mention the winery on top
of
that.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So for both of us, it wound up being a great, great deal. It's been so fun.
How did the two of you meet?
Gosh, the two of us met because Doug and Jan were coming to Walla Walla on a regular basis, and I had my winery downtown. And Jan and I have a lot in common, and she also sort of searches for the unknown as well. And I think she got a kick out of the concept that I was a female winemaker. And so she sought me out, and then they were just friends of the winery. And we wound up doing a lot of things together, and wound up at a Mexican restaurant in the middle of the summer one year, and that's when we decided that maybe it might be a good thing to start talking about joining forces.
Isn't
so we
that wonderful?
We're just friends.
That's great.
Yeah.
Now there's significance, the name Tarot. What does that stand for?
Yeah, so Doug Ross Kelly, R-O, and Mike Tembrell, T-E, so you've got, I did that flipped, T-E-R-O, that's Tarot, and that's the two guys behind the winery, that's their two last names. So it's a joint venture.
Absolutely. The idea that Doug is the caretaker then of a 25-acre vineyard, what portion of that crop then is used for your own wines as opposed to selling them to others?
It's a good question, because I think it's going to be changing over the years.
Okay.
Tarot is just going to be doing their first release on October 9th of this year.
Congratulations.
And those are,
yeah,
we're really excited about that. Those are 2007 wines, and I have no doubt that everything is going to be great. And so it just makes sense that with people down the road, that with other wineries that might be changing up vineyard contracts, I think Tarot is going to be pulling back more of that fruit for themselves, because it's really the cream of the crop. It's just a matter of knowing that we can handle it equipment-wise, space-wise. You know, everything sort of snowballs from vineyard to winery and winery to bottles.
That's great. And now you use the terms, I've been out on the different sites, the Windrow Field Blend. What does that mean?
Oh, the Windrow Field Blend is Doug's baby, and that is a very neat concept and one that's hard to fulfill as well as Doug has. That is where he's just taken the same percentage of what's planted in the vineyard, and he's put it in the bottle. So the vineyard is planted with 70% Cabernet Sauvignon. The blend is 70% Cabernet Sauvignon. And the tricky part is, he harvested this blend in the field on the same day. So he harvested Merlot and Cab Franc and Malbec and Petit Verdot all on the same day, which is next to impossible to do, because like with any fruit or vegetable that you see out there, there are different seasons. So Cab, for example, tends to ripen way later than, say, a Merlot usually does. And so he had to wait until he could sort of get a balance, which is next to impossible, and he has done an amazing job.
And again, that synchronicity, because that means the fruit will bring a different flavoring to the party by trying to choose when you pick them all at the same time?
Sure. So what happens is sugar and acids are inversely proportional in a grape harvest. You start off with low sugar and high acid, and you wind up with low acid and high sugar. And so the stuff that is ripe early and you wait to pick it until later, it's going to wind up with a lot of sugar, i.e. alcohol, and very little acid. But on the flip side, you've got something like a Cab that you're harvesting for this blend way early that's going to have low sugar, low alcohol, and somewhat high acid. And acid's nice for structure and long finishes specifically. So you're getting that balance.
Well, lest any of our listeners not think there isn't chemistry, organic chemistry involved in winemaking, they certainly just heard it from Ashley Trout, the teacher. That's great. Well, Ashley, the Malbec focus then, and where you're headed, do you see then your endeavors with Tarot Estates opening up the vantage point of doing other blended wines then?
Well, I do Malbec and Malbec blends, and I do get to play around with those Tarot blends. But one thing that I've found is nature is going to throw you for a loop, whether it's the season or the clone of the Malbec or the whatever it is. And so for me, just focusing on Malbec is a fascinating world. It does so much on its own without me trying to blend it with a ton of other things. I do Malbec blends just because they're fun. I really enjoy Malbec and Cab, and I enjoy Malbec and Syrah as blends. But for the most part, I'm really looking forward to focusing even more and more and more throughout the years just on Malbec and its nuances.
Well, and I think that certainly makes sense with your being so focused on a limited number of cases. That gives you that luxury to also focus then on diversity right within that realm that you're in.
Yeah, sure, absolutely.
So to this point in time, tell me some of your biggest aha moments then. You know, from the time you went from a part-time winemaker to now here you sit, you know, really ramping up a business that has such a rich heritage. What's the biggest eye-opener?
Gosh, there have been a lot of aha moments. I would say every morning there is an aha moment. A lot of the aha moments have been, I would say there were maybe two main aha moments. One was where I went from working for another winery back in the day to having my own winery and realizing that if you do have a small winery and you are a small business owner, a lot of it is being a small business owner,
exactly,
which means not a lot of wine stuff. And that really threw me for a loop. And I was trying to sort of backtrack and get back to the wines. And that was one of the reasons I've joined forces with Tarot, because it's allowed me to do that. But the other aha moment is sometimes you have done what you've done for so many years that there's a possibility that you just fall into autopilot. And when you read an article in the Wine Spectator or Wine Business Monthly or Decanter or the, you know, Enological Society, what have you, there's always something new. Even though the wine industry is 5,000 years old, there's always another reason not to fall into autopilot. And there's something about that that is really exciting and invigorating.
And, you know, I think that's advice probably that all of us should take heed with our respective fields or our crafts, to say the least. Well, Ashley Trout from Flying Trout Wines and Tarot Estates, thanks so much for joining us today on Circles of Change. And we're going to keep track of the upcoming release. Congratulations on October 9th for Tarot Wine. And those that
really
subsequently
excited.
Fro for your organization. So thanks for joining us today.
Great. Thank you so much.
You bet. Thanks. Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, 877-544-2580.